Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Jisoo Kyi. Thank you so much for keeping it right here on WGN Radio. Coming up in today's show, we're going to be talking with the chief economist on Illinois' population loss during this past decade. It was the worst in the nation, and the economist is from the Illinois Policy Institute. Also, we're going to be talking with Crane Chicago's Frank Sennett on some trending stories. But we're going to start with our favorite expert on finance, the economy, the markets. Also, she has a weekly personal finance column syndicated in major newspapers by Tribune Content Agency, Terry Savage. And she's going to be discussing how the markets reacted to Iran and the volatility along with the de-escalation. But a lot happened overnight, right, Terry?
Oh, my goodness. I think a lot of people slept through it. It was an amazing night. After the announcement that there had been some missiles, the futures for the stock market opened, were trading down 400 points. You know, let's make this point, G, first. We think our markets open in the morning and close in the afternoon, but the truth is that all the major markets around the world trade 24 hours a day. So if there's a news-breaking event, that's going to be reflected in the markets. And even though the New York Stock Exchange is closed, the futures markets where the big money hedges its bets are open and trading all around the clock. So the futures were down 400 points late last night. Even more scary, gold hit a high of $1,603 an ounce, broke up through $1,600, seven-year high. And oil prices, which had been about $56 a barrel, soared to over almost $72. Mm-hmm. So I'm telling you, that was a scary moment. And then, as it came out that there were no casualties, and this morning, gold fell back. The stock market rebounded, opened about even. Now, as you just heard from Orion, is up 200 points. Gold, which had been 1603, I'm looking right now on the computer, is trading down $40 from that high at 1563. And oil prices have also backed off $10 a barrel. So you can see that the word for the day is volatility. Either you have to decide you're going to ride it out forever, or you're going to be very careful if you're trading these markets.
It sounds like the market took a sigh of relief, but you're still stressing caution, and this is the case in your latest article that you just posted on terrysavage.com.
Yeah, I just posted a new column because I wanted people expect me to react. The reaction is, remember the story of the little boy who cried wolf? I feel like the little girl who cried bear. And after a while, nobody believed. But I still stress the fact that one day a real bear market will come along. And so if you didn't sleep through this very scary experience last night, maybe the next one will happen in daylight market hours. And it just depends on your personal situation. But a bear market could be devastating if one were triggered. Actually, the world seems to be relieved, number one, that nothing worse is happening. And I might say the markets look like they're impressed because the rally really took place after the president spoke, impressed that the U.S. is getting tough. So whether that's an accurate assessment or not, we are in the black today for sure, or in the green.
Well, I'm sure you even felt a sense of relief when you heard the president speak and de-escalate the situation.
I think the jury's out right now on whether this was smart like a fox or crazy insane. But right now, it seems, you know, for 30, 40 years, we've been worried about the maniacs in the Middle East cutting off our oil supply. The president made a very good point when he said that we are now energy independent. They don't have that stranglehold over us anymore. And now perhaps the people in the Middle East are worried about the maniac in the United States who dared to do that. It was a pretty bold strike. And so maybe we have a more level playing field. We'll see. We can only hope that, you know, it took Nixon to go to China. Perhaps it will take Trump to settle the Middle East. It would really be interesting if that happened. And that's, you know, that's what makes the market so wonderful. I conclude my column by saying, remember, there's never been a 20-year period where you lost money in a diversified portfolio of American stocks with dividends reinvested. And I've seen some scary times in my life. It was pretty scary last night, but we're through it now for the day anyway.
Well, a lot more coming up with Terry Savage, including your questions. So give us a call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can call us. You can text us. Terry definitely knows exactly what you need to do with your finances. She helps me out a lot. So a lot more coming up with Terry Savage after the break. Back with a Wintrust Business Lunch favorite, Terry Savage. She's answering your questions on personal finance. Right now, we have Paula on the line. Hi, Paula. I'm hearing that you have a question about a credit card balance transfer.
Hi, G. Love you.
Love you, too. Thanks for calling in.
So much. Here's my question. I'm trying to do a high balance transfer to the AMX Everyday card. I've done my research, and that's the one I chose. Received a letter in the mail saying that they were unable to approve my request due to a freeze placed on my credit file. And to help access the credit report, they want a PIN from Experian. Have you heard of providing a PIN? And what's the best way to try to pay off a high credit card debt? Am I doing the right thing?
Okay, well, I don't know where to start with this. These are two separate questions. First of all, a lot of people put a freeze on their credit card because of the Equifax breach almost 2 years ago now, I guess. And if you go to Experian or Equifax, wherever you went, they should have given you a PIN that allows you to lift it for any place where you're applying for credit, or if you're applying for a new job and they were going to check your credit report or insurance. So contact, I think you said Experian, or was it? Contact them, and they will give you a PIN so you can temporarily lift the freeze, or you can temporarily just lift the freeze in general right now and make it easy for them. Now, it's funny because I would have posted a column today about bills and what to do with them until this stock market thing sort of preempted that, so I'll post this tomorrow or the next day about credit cards and the bills coming. And I talk about balance transfers. There's a new survey that says half of all cardholders have opened a balance transfer card at some point. 18% of people have done so more than once. It's very interesting. It's a trap unless you know how to deal with it. You transfer the balance to a card that doesn't charge you interest. You have to check the time length. It could be 6 months or as long as 18 months. There may be fees, but you can be sure that if you haven't paid off that balance, your interest rate will soar at the end of that free, no-interest period. So you want to check. You've done your homework. If others want to do it, they can go to comparecards.com or bankrate.com and search out balance transfer cards. It's a good idea because it gives you breathing room from that horrendous interest, but you must make sure you pay down the balance during that period.
The entire balance, or do they just want to see that you're making payments?
Listen, here's the deal. Your interest right now, whatever it is, odds on bet that when the free interest period expires, your interest rate is going to jump dramatically higher even than you're paying now. So it's only a good deal if you make a real, real effort to pay a lot of that, preferably all of that, down during that six-month period. Otherwise, you're just buying time, and it could be an expensive purchase.
Thank you very much.
I hope that helped, Paula.
Okay.
I've done the same thing, and so have a lot of people listening. So good luck to you. Thanks, Paula. Okay, Terry, I've got a question for you that came in on our text, through text. This is from the 260. What are your thoughts on rolling over a traditional IRA into a Roth? We are retired and 64 years old, had a 26% return on the IRA portfolio this year, and don't anticipate to need to withdraw from the IRA in the near term. Also have a 401k of nearly the same value. Do you have a withdrawal tax advantage strategy using both of these tax-deferred accounts?
Okay, let me try and make this simple. Okay. When you roll over a traditional IRA, let's start with that, to a Roth, you must pay all the income taxes due at that moment. And then, ever after, all the growth comes tax-free, and you're not required to make required minimum withdrawals. The worst time in the universe to convert to a Roth IRA is when the stock market is in your account, presumably, are at all-time highs. In hindsight, of course, you would have done it last year when your account was worth 30% less. The time to do the Roth conversion is at when you think the market is low, you're inevitably, unless you just go to all cash in this account, which is not advisable at your age, the market will back off, and I would wait to do the Roth. The second thing is, don't plan to pay the taxes with money from the IRA, because that's another withdrawal, and really you need to have money outside your IRA to pay the taxes in order to do a conversion. So you need to do some studying on that. You know, I have a new book out, The Savage Truth on Money, and I have a new edition, and I talk at length about that. You definitely don't want to do the Roth conversion now because it's at its highs. Let's just wait a while. Your 401k, when you leave work and do retire, then that's when you should roll it into an IRA, probably a traditional IRA, unless you want to pay the taxes then. I mean, I think a lot of people believe these are the lowest tax rates we'll see, but a lot of people believe these are the highest stock prices we'll see. So you're kind of caught in the trap. But that's a lot of money to pay to the government at one fell swoop.
Yeah, they do say that they're 64 years old, retired, and they do have dividends, income from dividends, and et cetera.
Well, so the time also, you might want to think one more thing. You aren't on Medicare yet, but the year in which you have income, substantial income, because of a Roth conversion, the next year your Medicare premiums are going to go dramatically higher. So there's a lot of things. This, you know, I also talk about financial planning. It's not about stock market advice only. It's about thinking about all these tax consequences and decision trees that you have to make. I suggest people go to WealthRamp.com. It is a free service with vetted financial advisors who are all promised to be fiduciaries. That means they put your interests first and take only fees and no hidden commissions on deals. So WealthRamp.com. Go and meet with a financial planner. The first meeting should be free. They're trained to deal with all these strategies.
Got it. And that's WealthRamp, WealthRamp.com. Okay. Thanks,
Terry. Exactly.
All right. So here's another text question from the 773. I just filed for Chapter 7. I have 2 years left on my car payments. What advice can you give me? And was it a smart thing to do? I was $18,000 in debt.
Well, it's a little late to ask if that was a smart thing to do, and I don't know all your financial circumstances. Obviously, you could keep your car, and I hope you'll keep making payments on it, so at the end, you'll own your car. But for everybody else who's trying to make that decision, I always recommend the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. These numbers, by the way, are all up in the resources at terrysavage.com. But the toll-free number for credit counseling you can trust is 800-388-2227. Again, 800-388-2227. Before you contemplate bankruptcy, sometimes that's the only answer. But before you do that, you need to get some advice about maybe you could repay these bills and rebuild your credit faster. It used to be a horrible sin to file bankruptcy. Now it's more commonplace. And it doesn't destroy your ability to get credit in the future. But believe me, it will cost you more, the credit you do get after a bankruptcy. And it can impact you in other ways, like the cost of your life insurance, maybe when you go to look for a new job. So all those things have an impact, and you should consider those before bankruptcy. I hope you get through this. I hope you keep your car and get a fresh start.
Well, we did have that caller that talked about balance transfer rates with credit cards. And I know that Wallet Hub estimates that our credit card debt in the country is over $1.1 trillion. But there's been a growth of a new category called personal loans. Would you recommend getting a personal loan to consolidate all of your credit card debt?
That might be easier said than done.
Okay. If,
you know, once you're trapped in the box of credit card debt, the cost of getting new credit or even consolidating your credit is very expensive. There are fees that you pay for these loans that add ultimately to the balance. You can look around. I mean, I always recommend that SoFi is one of the places that started out doing student loan refinancings and now does personal loans. There are actually a bunch of websites. But, you know, the first rule of debt is when you're in a deep hole, stop digging.
Right.
And don't fool yourself that transferring the dirt or yourself from one hole to another is getting you out in any way. There are a couple simple formulas. If you double the minimum monthly payment on your credit card, write that amount down and pay that same amount every month, not double the new minimum. Don't charge another penny. And your card will be paid off in less than 3 years, as opposed to 18 or 20 years on a regular minimum monthly payment deal. That's how the credit card companies get rich. You pay the minimums you think you're okay, but you're paying interest. So double it, pay that same amount every month, you get out in 3 years. People say to me, oh, very well, easy for you to say. How do I do that? Check your budget's a perfect time of the year. Download Quicken. Figure out where that money is going, the lattes, whatever it is. Or, gee, look at the unemployment numbers. Get a weekend job right now and take all that cash. Use it to pay down your credit card debt. The good times don't last forever. I didn't make that up. It's in the Bible. So use these good times to pay down the debt so you're not buried when things do eventually slow down.
Always excellent, sound, good advice from Terry Savage of terrysavage.com. Be sure to check out her weekly personal finance column. It's syndicated in major newspapers by Tribune Content Agency. Thank you so much, Terry. We're looking forward to next week already.
Thanks, Chief.
Have a great day. Okay. Time now. Here on the Winterest Business Lunch, joined now by Illinois Policy Institute's Chief Economist, Orfi Divongi. Hello, Orfi. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Fantastic to have you, but you don't have great news to report. Illinois saw the nation's worst population loss during this past decade. This is not great, especially because it's concerning a very important segment of the population.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, like you said, you know, we've had the worst population decline, you know, of the decade, if not of the state's, in the state's history. And most of our population losses are not because people are dying younger. In fact, people are living longer. Illinoisans are living the longest they've ever lived. It's because people are actually moving. Illinoisans are moving to other states. And that's really unfortunate. We've lost over 853,000 residents to other states since 2010. And our population has been declining for six consecutive years now.
And you say this is particularly troubling because it's a loss of prime working age adults. It's not people that are going off to retire and live in another warmer climate. And that's affecting our economy.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, you have young workers and young families that are choosing to go where and to places where the cost of living is cheaper, where they create faster jobs, and they also see, you know, higher income growth in those other states, and so it's a no brainer. You know, if staying in Illinois is going to cost you more, and it's going to be difficult to plant roots and you know, raise your children here, you're going to go and look for places that are more conducive to employment opportunities and also to doing business.
Orfi, before we talk about why this is happening, can we talk a little bit about where we should be? Because I think that really highlights what a great loss this truly is.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, if we look at the amount of income that is being generated by these people who have left in other states, you know, Illinois has lost about $12.4 million per day in economic activity in the last decade. When you look at the state of Illinois and you think about all the problems we're facing right now with our huge unfunded pension liability and our difficulty paying the bills, you know, our government paying its bills, you know, you would want those people to be here because, in our larger tax base, means that, you know, people will pay more in taxes, you know, without having to actually raise the tax rates, and the state will actually be able to pay the bills. So it's really unfortunate. But here's the worst thing about this whole situation. You know, when you lose talent in the labor force, what tends to happen is new investors will find it very difficult to want to invest in Illinois because it will become very costly to find good talent to fill jobs. So the fact that we're losing people is actually making, you know, creating some sort of snowballing effect, some doom and gloom scenario where there are fewer jobs being created and more people continue to leave, and we don't expect that trend to change anytime soon.
To illustrate this a little bit further, Illinois lost 104,986 people last year. Roughly, that's 288 residents per day. That's one person every 5 minutes.
That's right. That's right. One person every 5 minutes. And it's not just a regional thing, you know, because if you look at other states in the region, you look at border states, their populations are growing. So we know it's something specific to Illinois. And then, you know, in terms of recommendations, well, what should we be doing differently? Well, let's just look at the states that are growing the fastest, right? So you look at Utah, Texas, Colorado, Nevada, and Florida. They were the fastest growing states in America. Those are states with low flat income taxes. They don't have, you know, don't have these high progressive taxes that are now going to be on the ballot in November this year in Illinois. You know, there are states where they create jobs at such a fast rate that their pool of unemployed workers are not staying unemployed very long, right? So they're getting into jobs. You're seeing fast income growth. There's huge opportunity in other places. And so it really is a no-brainer. We need to fix our climate, our policy climate right here in Illinois, if we're going to try to see that reversed anytime soon.
And your root cause for all of this population loss amongst prime working age adults, you say, is based on taxes.
Oh, well, it's more than just the tax. So the tax burden increased twice in the last decade. The reason why taxes have keep increasing in Illinois is because we have a broken public employee pension system, right? So we have this huge unfunded liability estimated at roughly $250 billion. Our pension costs keep rising so much so that pension costs now take up 25% of the state budget. What that means is there's less money to go to services and, you know, things that workers and families actually value. You have less money going to your schools, to the classrooms, less money going to public parks, less money going to infrastructure, less money going to education. So if all this money is being swallowed up by this pension problem, you're paying more taxes but not getting a bang for your buck. So your cost of living keeps increasing and increasing, but you're really getting nothing in return. And the fact that the state of Illinois, the governor, has done nothing to address this problem means that taxes are going to continue to increase because, you know, we have this debt that's increasing, so pension costs are going to continue to increase. And so what do families in Illinois realize? Well, they say, well, if I stay, I'm probably going to face another tax hike in the near future. And so, you know, the expectation of these tax increases is enough to send people towards the exits.
I know that you're anti the progressive tax plan that's being proposed right now. What do you say to folks that are for it that feel as though if you have more money, then you should pay more?
Oh, absolutely. The problem with this progressive income tax that's going on the ballot is that it provides no tax relief whatsoever, right? So the governor sold it as a 97% tax cut for middle-income families. That's just not true. What's going to happen is you're going to get, you know, in the first year of progressive income tax, we've read the numbers, you know, families will get maybe, middle-income families will get maybe a $30 or $40 tax cut just to see their property taxes go up by $116 because there's been no pension reform. The real problem is this pension problem. And that's the reason we need to address that problem, because your tax burden continues to increase year over year, no matter what. And on top of that, the fact that high-income families are leaving the state at almost twice the rate as other groups in the population means that there won't be enough of those rich people left over to tax soon enough. And so what's going to happen then is they're going to shift the tax burden onto middle-income families. And so that's the biggest fear for us when we look at this new proposal that basically gives Illinois government, you know, blank check to go ahead and tax every group, every income class.
I'd like to thank Illinois Policy Institute's chief economist, Orfi Divongi, who I've been speaking with. Where can folks go and read your report?
Oh, absolutely. You should definitely go to illinoispolicy.org. That's where all of our work is, and we have this report on the census numbers that looks at population losses, where people are going, the causes for the population loss, but also what it means for the state's economy.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Orfi. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Winter's Business Lunch, joined now by award-winning journalist Frank Sennett, who's also the Director of Digital Strategy and Custom Media for Crane Chicago. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic. Happy New Year. I don't know if I had a chance to say that to
you yet. Happy New Year. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so you've got
We're all getting back to it.
I know. You've got some news on Vienna beef. It better be good news, because I don't want anyone messing with my hot dogs.
Well, you know, they're still going to be made where they've been made since 2013, right there in Bridgeport. But many of us, the iconic Vienna beef location is on the north side at Damon and Elston, where they've been for nearly 50 years. They've still had their headquarters and warehouse there. They are now moving that portion of the business to the Kinzie Street corridor at 2501 West Fulton. So they are going to end, you know, 5 decades on the north side.
So that means I can't grab my Vienna beef hot dog on the way to Costco anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, you'll just have to go into Costco and get that $1.50 deal with the drink and the dog. Yeah.
Right. Why are they moving? What's happening?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of redevelopment in that area. They changed the configuration of the lanes there at Elston, you know, cut out some of the space that they had. And so they're going to move and then lease this land, it looks like, for an upscale driving range from a New York-based company called Drive Shack. So it's a 9.3-acre site overall. And, you know, it looks like they're going to have their hot dog and eat it, too.
So good news for people that want to practice their golf swing.
That's right.
Okay. And also, you've got a story. Of course, everyone's been talking about it. Legal pot. And there's going to be a new opportunity for folks to get in on all of this money that everyone's making.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of in the same way that you get the big brewers and you have the craft beer. There are now applications available in Illinois for licenses to grow small boutique amounts of marijuana. So there could be some craft growers with up to 5,000 square feet of cultivation space, compared to the large growers, which can grow up to 210,000 square feet. So if there are people out there who feel they have a certain niche recipe that you know, could be a craft marijuana, that they can get one of the 40 craft grow licenses. And there's also another 40 infuser licenses for people who want to do edibles like candy bars and candy and all that stuff.
So this means that there's going to be someone that specializes in artisanal, unique, one of a kind. I talked quietly and softly to my marijuana plants.
Exactly, yeah. And they pipe in, you know, soothing electronica and that kind of stuff, yeah, to make sure they grow to their full potential.
So 40 licenses each for infusers and for craft growers, and then also transporter licenses. Are there just unlimited amounts for transporters?
Let's see. Yeah, they. I don't have a cap on that I see in the story, but that's a good question. I imagine that they...
I guess you just need an unlimited...
Yeah, it's uncapped, right. So, awesome. Yeah, so you can be like the Uber for marijuana, I guess.
Right, and of course, there's always those... this has been something that's been discussed at length, the social equity provisions. So there's a 20% bonus in the scoring process if you're applying for one of these licenses. So that's always a good thing as well. Okay.
Yeah, we talked about that recently with the city council, and so that is coming to pass, these kinds of provisions. Mm-hmm.
It's a little hard to think about boating season right now, but I do dream about it often. Not that I have a boat. I don't own a boat, but I like to make friends with people that own boats, and hopefully soon one of those friends could actually dock their boat on Navy Pier.
Yeah, you need a friend with a truck and you need a friend with a boat, right? And save the headache for them. Yeah, so Navy Pier is going to have a permanent marina for recreational boaters. It's a $9 million Navy Pier Marina that's going to go on the north side where you typically drive to get to the parking. It's kind of the least picturesque part of Navy Pier. They're going to put some permanent boat slips in there that people with boats up to 130 feet can bring in, and it'll have concierge services, boaters lounge, a store, Wi-Fi, all this fun stuff for people who want to come in and have dinner in the Loop or in River North and then get back on their boat.
Frank, do you know where the money is coming from?
Yeah, it's privately funded, it's an investor who got approval back in 2016, Randy Podolsky. It's $9 million. He's a commercial real estate veteran. They're putting $9 million into this, and it is something he's dreamed about for a long time.
So I'm guessing this investor owns a boat, huh?
That would be my guess. He's been an avid boater since 1983, so unless he's borrowing a lot, I'm guessing he must have a craft of his own.
That's pretty cool. That's been interesting to see the resurgence of Navy Pier and its popularity, not just with tourists, but with local folks, too.
And I think we should plan on doing a live remote from Randy's boat when it opens.
Are you going to bring the cooler with the refreshments? That's all I request.
I will, and nice koozies so they keep them cold.
Okay, Frank. Where can we go to find all of these stories and also, find what you're up to, too?
Well, at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks for asking.
Well, thank you so much. This has been Frank Sinnott, the Director of Digital Strategy and Custom Media, and, of course, an award-winning journalist himself. So thanks, Frank, so much for being with us. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.